Right now on the Daily Debrief, a surprise arrest in the case of an accused billionaire pedophile who thought he evaded prosecution until now. Plus, fireworks and a Fifth Amendment plea in a hearing involving actor Kevin Spacey. And
I am a homicidal maniac.
A defendant facing a possible death sentence argues to get back on the witness stand.
Mr. Nelson, do you want to be sentenced to death?
Yes.
You won't believe what he says. The Daily Debrief recaps the day in court. It's Monday, July 8th.
Welcome to the Debrief, everybody. Aaron Keller, along with a great panel. We have a lot to talk about tonight, including a bombshell arrest against a billionaire accused of being a sexual predator and who escaped prosecution through a sweetheart deal with prosecutors. That is until now. Jeffrey Epstein, now charged with the sex trafficking of minors and conspiring to sex traffic minors. He faces up to 45 years in prison if convicted. Chief Investigative Correspondent Brian Ross is in our newsroom. Brian, you've been following this case for some time. How did this come about?
Well, it's quite a surprise, Aaron, and good afternoon to you. This afternoon, Jeffrey Epstein remains in federal custody after pleading not guilty at the federal courthouse here to the sex trafficking charges. In a day of dramatic developments, the U.S. Attorney Jeff Berman laid out the government's case against Epstein, including allegations that involve some girls as young as 14.
Beginning in at least 2002 and continuing until 2005, Epstein is alleged to have abused dozens of victims by causing them to engage in sex acts with him at his mansion in New York and at his estate in Palm Beach, Florida. The victims, all underage girls at the time of the alleged conduct, were given hundreds of dollars in cash after each encounter, either by Epstein or by one of Epstein's employees. The underage girls were initially recruited to provide Epstein with massages and often did so nude or partially nude. These massages became increasingly sexual in nature and would typically include one or more sex acts as specified in the indictment.
Epstein was arrested Saturday night as he stepped off his private jet from an overseas trip at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey. At the same time, federal agents conducted a raid at his multi-million dollar mansion on New York's Upper East Side, turning up what they called devastating evidence of guilt.
Yes, contemporaneous with the arrest of Epstein at Teterboro Airport, agents executed a search warrant on his mansion in New York City and recovered and seized, and that was a search pursuant to a valid warrant. Agents seized evidence, including nude photographs of what appeared to be underage girls.
Prosecutors say there are hundreds, if not thousands, of such photographs found in Epstein's safe. These allegations involving Epstein and underage girls are not new, but he apparently had cut a sweetheart deal with federal prosecutors in Miami that allowed him to plead guilty only to a minor state charge and spend only about a year behind bars. But outrage over that sweetheart deal rose after an investigative report in the Miami Herald, in which several of the alleged victims came forward to tell their stories.
We were underage. We were little girls.
I was 16.
I was 16.
I started going to him when I was like 14, 15, 14 turning 15.
If you think at 14, $200, that's a lot of money at 14 years old. I mean, that's a lot of money now.
At least two of his victims were in the courtroom today to hear Epstein plead not guilty. Prosecutors say that Epstein, whose friends included Donald Trump, Bill Clinton, and Prince Andrew of England, could spend the rest of his life behind bars if found guilty of the charges, Aaron.
So, Brian, even though there was this deal in Florida, these charges in the Southern District of New York could stick. That's my understanding.
That's right. The deal was only with the prosecutors in Florida. It was not a universal deal with all Justice Department officials. So that deal does not apply to the prosecutors here in New York.
Brian Ross, Chief Investigative Correspondent, thanks for that report tonight. The criminal prosecution against actor Kevin Spacey on charges he groped a Massachusetts teenager may be falling apart tonight. The accuser took the stand against Spacey at a hearing and was unclear about whether he had deleted some of the text messages he exchanged about the incident. The accuser originally said Spacey got him drunk and then groped him on Nantucket Island. The defense alleges that group text messages were deleted from the accuser's phone and that the accuser's mother, a former Boston TV news anchor, was involved with interfering with evidence.
His credibility is at the forefront of this entire case and the prosecution's case. What she's admitted deleting is impeachment material about him, his credibility, his veracity, his ability to remember. She's the only one among us who knows what those, quote, frat boy activities are. Trooper Donovan certainly didn't. But if she's gone through and scrubbed that phone to make him look like some sort of choir boy, that is, according to the general law under Massachusetts, that is altering, destroying, mutilating, or concealing a document or a record with the intent to impair that record's integrity. Period. Full stop. There is no way that if she's already admitted, which she has, that she has compromised the integrity of that phone before giving it over to the police, even though she may deny that it dealt with text messages or group texts, she certainly admitted that she's scrubbed the phone and sanitized the phone in terms of her son's overall credibility. And that's not fair for us, and I think that should be taken very seriously in terms of a prosecution. She could be prosecuted for that in and of itself. So I want to make sure that counsel's aware that it's not just her denial of the texts. It's the fact that she admits to having scrubbed the phone to make him look other than he actually was.
Those are the defense accusations. Let's listen now as the accuser's father fought back with the defense when he was asked about the phone.
When I refer to his phone, I'm talking about the phone that was in his possession on July 7th and 8th of 2016. So we're talking the same language. You understand?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
How many years ago?
Well, you tell me. When was July of 2016?
Okay. Go ahead. What's your question?
It was three. I'm sorry, what was that?
What's your question?
Mr. Little, I'll ask the questions. You answer the questions. Clear about our roles, okay?
I understand what our roles are.
Gents? He was inquiring as to what the question was, Mr. Jackson. I think you both kind of had overlapping comments there. But go ahead, sir.
To answer your question, sir, it was 3 years ago today, July 8th, 2016, the phone that was in your son's possession. That's what I'm referring to when I ask you about the phone. Yes? You understand?
That's what you say, yes.
Okay.
Sure.
At any point did you ask your son to look at his phone, that phone?
He looks at his phone every day. What kind of question is that?
Sir, hang on a second. Now, back to the point that Mr. Jackson made. Listen to the question and answer just stop. Listen to the question and answer just the question that's asked, sir. You don't need to go beyond that. If there's a further question, Mr. Jackson will ask it or Mr. Glennie will ask it, all right? So just focus on the question, sir, and we'll move through this examination more quickly. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. At any point, did you ask for you to look at your son's phone?
No.
So between July of 2016 and when this incident was reported to the police 15 months later, October of 2017, did you ever see his phone or the contents of his phone?
I did see his phone, yes.
Did you ever look into the contents of the phone?
I did not look into the contents of the phone.
That's how it started, but later the father said he did look at the phone in a limited sense, and the fireworks got worse.
He did look at his phone.
He showed me the text that said, help me.
Okay,
does that help you? Because I think there's a clear text there that...
Sure. I appreciate that you
have... I think this is going way too far.
Listen, I'll decide that. You answer the question, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. If you don't understand my question, just ask me and I'll repeat it. Okay?
I think you've had way too many questions that have gone way too far.
Sir, listen to me. You keep this up, I'm going to hold you in contempt. This is a criminal proceeding, and you will cooperate, or as I say, you'll be held in contempt.
I understand.
I appreciate that. Go ahead.
Thank you. What were the circumstances in which you looked at his text messages?
He showed me the text.
When was that?
I can't tell you an exact date. I don't recall the exact date.
Can you give me an idea of the month or even the time of year?
It was the week when it happened.
Okay. And
do you want to let everyone know what that was that happened?
who was there when you looked at his text
message? I asked you a question.
Listen, are you not hearing me, sir?
I am. I'm sorry. Look, I'm sorry. My son...
Listen to me. This is not about that at this moment. It's about what you know.
But has turned into that.
You... Listen, you're real close.
I'm sorry.
May I, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. Let's try this again, Mr. Little. Approximately, if you don't know the day, approximately when was it that you looked at his phone?
I don't know.
Do you believe, as you testified just a couple of seconds ago, that it was the week of the alleged incident?
Yes.
Who was there when you looked at that phone?
My son and my wife.
Did she look at the phone as well?
She did.
So the two of you as parents, Will Little's parents, scrolled through the text messages he had on his phone, correct?
No, we did not scroll through his text messages. We looked at the messages that he showed us.
Finally, some answers in this examination.
There was what we thought was a crime here.
As a matter of fact, the topic, as you put it, came up multiple times before that phone was ever even turned over to the police.
The topic of what? What is your question?
The contents of that phone, the fact that there were text messages from that night. That was discussed among you, your wife, and Mr.
I think
Little.
It's quite obvious, yes, there were texts from that night.
That wasn't my question. See if you can answer my question. Did you discuss with your wife? I know there were text messages, Mr. Little. That wasn't my question. Did you discuss those text messages?
Yes.
The contents? Did you ever or your wife ever express concern to Mr. Little, your son, about what those text messages contained?
No.
Did you ever tell your son that you thought some of the text messages needed to be deleted?
No.
Before he turned it over to the police?
No.
How about your wife? Did she look at the phone more closely than you did?
You guys going to have me answer questions for my wife?
Sure, it's what you observed. So if you observed her studying the phone, then you can answer that yes or no.
What is your question?
Did your wife, in your presence, did you ever observe her looking in more detail than you did?
No.
Okay. Did you ever see her looking at the phone or looking at the text messages after that first week after the incident?
I can't recall. I have no idea.
The attorney for the accuser's mother, former Boston TV news anchor Heather Unruh, notified the court that Unruh could also plead the fifth, but she waived her right to do so. Here is her testimony, which she gave after waiving her Fifth Amendment rights and possibly subjecting herself to prosecution.
Ms. Unruh, you indicated that you were raised to tell the truth.
Yes.
Let's talk about that for a second. If the truth is that you deleted or altered certain things on that phone, you're going to tell us that, correct?
Yes.
Did you ever instruct your son to delete certain of those text messages?
Certainly not.
Did you ever delete any of the text messages in the conversation between your son and MD?
No.
Did you ever delete any text messages between your son or among your son and the group that was being texted back and forth that night?
No.
The easiest way for you to have turned over a pristine phone to Trooper Donovan would be to turn it off and just set it there.
Yes.
As opposed to texting with your son minutes before he arrives, concerned, very concerned, obviously.
I don't hear anything in there that sounds very concerned.
Take a pic, ... I think your pictures are still ending up on your old phone. Not messages, but pics. You had determined that the messages were not getting to his old phone. You were determining what photographs or what data was actually getting to his old phone before you turned it over to the police.
I can't tell you that. I'm sorry. That is not a clear statement to me. I can't tell you that.
The accuser started to answer questions about his own phone, then took the fifth himself, so the judge struck his testimony from the record. That move is raising even more questions about exactly what happened. Now to the panel tonight, attorneys Norman Williams, Michael Bryant here. So, Norman, your analysis of what we just heard.
Yeah, I think the defense is successfully poking at her and is calling her on the carpet and saying that you altered the evidence. But what's interesting is that I think her news anchor sensibilities are able to listen to the call of the question, and there are times when he's asking questions that are not properly formed and she's attacking him back.
Well, you know, sometimes that can be seen as really kind of dodgy. So, Michael, you know, we have official denials, but then we have some I don't recalls on the record here. There was a fight at one point about spousal privilege and whether or not the husband should be answering questions about the what the wife did. But it's like, well, if there's another person in the room, it erases that privilege. So this was just a big back and forth. And are we any closer to the truth here?
I think it's important, too, to point out that there was no jury involved here. So it got a little more out of hand than it might if a jury was sitting there listening. I think the key question is still the same. Did somebody, either the mom or the dad or the accuser, delete text that might be exculpatory to Kevin Spacey? That's what we're looking for here. I think we made two steps forward, maybe one step back, but I think we're heading the right direction there.
You know, the accuser himself is saying, hey, look, you know, I'm taking the fifth. I'm not going to say much after this point. So on we go. This will be interesting as that proceeding moves forward. And still ahead tonight here on The Debrief, we're going to head back inside the Scott Nelson trial. The defendant demands to get back on the witness stand, and you won't believe what he told the jury this time. Welcome back to The Debrief. Murder defendant Scott Nelson told a Florida judge he wanted to testify again. Nelson already took the witness stand earlier in his case and admitted he killed Jennifer Fulford because he needed money. Now, Nelson says he wants to speak again in the punishment phase of his trial. He's already been convicted. The question now is whether he should face life in prison or a death sentence. Nelson has blamed a probation officer for meddling with his attempts to maintain a job and secure housing after he was released from prison for robbing a bank. He says that's why he had to murder the victim, because he says he had no other choice. Let's listen now to the defendant practically begging to get back on the witness stand and bringing up alleged correspondence with the office of Senator and presidential candidate Bernie Sanders.
So what records do you believe are in Senator Bernie Sanders' office that you believe should be admitted into evidence in this penalty phase of your trial here today?
Yes, sir.
What are you referring to?
Well, what I'm referring to is when I took a complaint and I sent it to the United States Senator Bernie Sanders, he takes that complaint and he sends it to whatever office I choose. For instance, the Central Office of the Federal Bureau of Prisons in Washington, D.C. He'll send it there to Congressional Affairs. They will investigate and run an investigation and find out what's going on with the complaint. As a result, for instance, one example, the warden of the facility responded to Senator Sanders and said, listen, he's going to get his colostomy changed, sir, and he's going to get his halfway house before he gets released. And I got none of that. And this is signed by the warden himself. Anything that I say shouldn't be just brushed off like I'm some impulsive liar or some embellishments or something. I can prove what I'm saying.
Nelson did make it to the stand, where he resumed his complaints against his probation officer, who he accuses of ruining his life.
And everything was in harmony. Everything was peaceful until Mr. Dominguez, the federal employee, shows up and says, walks up to the owner and he says, I need to talk to him alone. And the next day, he came down.
I'm sorry, wait a minute. Mr. Dominguez shows up and says, I need to talk to him alone. Who is he wanting to talk to alone?
The owner.
Okay, I'm sorry. I wasn't quite clear about the pronoun there. So go ahead, sir.
So he comes in and he deliberately, premeditatedly, and maliciously, he comes and blows me up in front of the owner. He has a gun and he's leaning on his gun. Hands him a card. I mean, this is pseudo-Christian, quasi-Christian guy, supposed to be a Christian owner, painter, owner of this business. And here's this federal guy, federal Mario, all this stuff, and should give him a little golden boss card, leaning on his gun, saying, what are you, crazy? What are you, nuts for letting this guy live here? Do you know this? Down a whole laundry list of crimes, and hey, this, that. Dude, I was done. I just went from, they were actually setting another business up for me to manage. I was going to get my license back, and I mean, things were going up. I was going from homeless to now, done. I'm done.
Okay, let's bring the panel into this. Michael Bryant, this guy gets up on the stand. He keeps going on and on, eventually just says, you know what, execute me.
Yeah.
Which juror is asking to push the button?
Yeah, you know, you have to wonder if the jury members are just thinking, you know, I was close, wasn't sure I could do it, but now I can give him what he wanted. It's outrageous to hear him say he's a homicidal maniac and then say, by the way, to a question that was objected to, but too late, the sustain came, yeah, put me to death. That's what I want. Give me what I want.
Norman Williams, I think that this is the sort of client that you hit the nail on the head with the other day, and you said, you know, as an attorney representing him, you just need to make sure that nothing comes back at you malpractice-wise and just let the chips fall where they are.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's blaming everybody for everything. He blamed his own lawyers. Everything is somebody else's fault and not his.
So, and we listened in the exchange there with the judge. He's throwing witnesses up there that his attorneys apparently didn't even know anything about. What's Bernie Sanders got to do with this? So he complains to a senator. What's that got to do with whether or not he killed this poor woman and he was convicted of it because he got up there and admitted to it?
It has absolutely nothing to do with it. And I am sure that he said to his attorneys, well, what about Bernie Sanders? What about this? What about that? And they said to him, look, that stuff is collateral. It's not relevant. And it's not going to help you. So we're not going to do that.
And now he's having a fit saying that he wants to. So Michael Bryant, you know, the victim's family is probably sitting there watching this. What's going through their minds?
You know, it's painful enough that they have to relive this and listen to this jerk go on and on with no conscience about what he did, how he did it, collateral damage. They're describing their loved one, Ms. Fulford, as collateral damage. No, this is just more agony for them. I'm sure they're thinking, it's almost over. We're going to get the justice for Jennifer that we had hoped for, and we just got to suck it up and hang with this.
And that's probably exactly what's going on here. So, Norman Williams, where does it go from here? I mean, the jury gets the case. Do they turn around and say, no, we're going to keep the guy alive because he's telling us, oh, yeah, go ahead and execute me. We'll just force him to stay alive. Like, what do they do?
Right. No, they have options. I think forcing him to stay alive is one of them, because they all might say, like, look, he did something wrong, but we don't feel comfortable putting a person to death the same way he put Ms. Fulford to death.
Our producer saying, hey, look, is this reverse psychology? Is he telling them this because he really wants to stay alive?
Crazy. He's a crazy man. He's a crazy genius. Yeah, I mean, you know, he'll try anything. But the bottom line is he's getting his day or two or three in court, and then we'll never hear from him again.
Well, you know, you never know. We could be sitting here talking about the appeals a year from now, or
that's
however
true.
Long it's going to take. Thanks, gentlemen, for joining on the debrief tonight. Appreciate the insights. And thanks for those of you watching along with us. Our live trial coverage is going to resume at 9 o'clock in the morning on the Law and Crime Network. We hope you'll join us for that. The debrief back here at 5 Eastern.